Watch out for the hole.
What hole?
Welcome to the Portable Hole Podcast. I'm Ryan George, and I'm here with my good friends Justin and Cynic. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. My foot's feeling a lot better. It was actually some of the worst pain I've had in my life. It was so really? Brutal. Ryan, remember when I sent you those pictures of my legs, and it looked like I had been in like a brutal Muay Thai fight?
Oh, from the from the crash, right?
Or from when accident. I crashed from a went slamming. Yeah, that was bad, but I functioned. I went out, I played, but for whatever reason, that happened to my foot, like it just popped out of nowhere, was so much worse. Like it gave me a bit of a, I don't know if it carried with it a fever or just the pain was so intense. Like I was literally moaning. I couldn't help it. The doctor says that it might've been a gout inflammation. And I know that can be pretty painful. It seems weird based on my diet. I don't eat that much beef or pork. I don't really eat any pork. And I don't drink beer. Those are the two biggest influencers of gout, but I guess it's still possible. And there were some other things, but man, I couldn't walk on it. It was so painful. And at one point it was just brutal. And then she gave me, I went to a doctor here. They gave me a steroid shot and it's gotten better so I can function. But wow, it's like, I have a pretty high pain tolerance. I could take a lot without really complaining, but that was like something else. I don't know. I hope you guys never experience anything like that.
Yeah, I mean,
that.
Also, it's like you can't brutal. Not be on your feet. It's like you can't.
Oh, it's depressing too.
Yeah. Did your shoes come off in the accident?
When I was on the accident, they didn't come off. No.
Was this related to the accident or was
it was, and the doctor was like, nah, because that would have, if it was a physical injury, like a broken bone, by the way, which I went to the emergency room and they did an infection test, which they couldn't find an infection. Yeah. They did an x-ray. They saw no broken bone. So they thought initially maybe it was a ligament tear or something like that. And the doctor was like, no, because if that's what it was, it would be localized in one spot. Instead, the pain was spreading out and went to my ankle. There's like, it's not a structural issue, or very probably won't be isn't a structural issue. So she says it's probably like gout or something like that, which is weird, but it's possible. My dad had it, so there is some genetic aspects to it, so it's possible that's what it is.
Yeah, my mom and my brother have had it, and in each case it's very painful. So
yeah, not fun.
You're past it. Not something.
Yeah, well, he's not the first person we've podcast with, Ryan, that suffers from chronic gout.
Yeah, that's right.
We thought we were a gout free show going forward, but it can always creep in. We're getting older. Those joints are getting older, Ryan.
Yeah. Ugh, that would just like ruin like life for me if I had to, debilitated. It's like it's a shoulder or an arm, like you can at least get around. But yeah, if it's your foot, like, I mean, you're screwed.
Well, I'm kind of,
but you got a corporate job. Just have them pay, just sit home and watch movies and have them pay you.
Yeah, go on. Yeah. To an extent.
Not that I want to turn this into the portable medical hour, but same thing. About a year ago in DC, decided to walk the monuments at night. I'm watching a lady struggle to get up on the little rise by the George Washington Monument. It's like, oh, that sucks. That's so small, that she's having such a hard time. So we scale it real quick, go up there, walk around. I go to hop down. Well, I don't see that there's about a 3-inch block underneath where I hop down. Catch my ankle on it, on the ground. Ankle swells up. So I ended up walking on it for 2 days. A year later, still not right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That damn body.
Yeah, it's like it does not get any better, and it's like the injuries are worse and the recovery takes longer, so that's what we have to look forward to the next 30-40 years, hopefully.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Well, until they replace our bodies.
All right. Well, they're replacing everything, so who knows? We'll talk, I guess, nice little segue.
Good segue into the first story,
which is where Justin, you're going to be replaced. So, have either you guys played with the Suno AI app at all? This is the AI music app.
I have not.
No.
Yeah,
well, there's a lot of buzz around it, and I played with it a little bit yesterday. And it's like, I mean, it's just like any of the other AI, you know, prompt-based programs. Like, you prompt it. So, like, you prompt it on, like, you can say, write me a song about whatever in a genre. So I asked it to write me a country song about a guy falling into a portable hole, and it wrote a song that it does with a lot of the other stuff, it's generic. And technically it's not brilliant, but if you just played that song for me, I would have just thought, okay, that's a random, you know, poppy country song. I did the same thing, but in the style of Rage Against the Machine, and it was like an emo rock thing. So it's like, obviously it's going to be based on what its data sets are and probably what's more popular is going to get. You're going to be more accurate with more popular things and less the more specific you get or the more obscure or esoteric you get. But it's crazy that it can come up with that out of whole cloth. And it's scary, because, like, yeah, it may not be great now, but, you know, what's it going to be in 5 years?
It will. No, it is great now. That's great. Yeah, it's like, just it's imagine what it is.
Yeah. Because I've been seeing a lot of advertisements for things like Replica and Kendroid, and I downloaded Kendroid and tried the free portion of it. Yeah. And let's make Ryan. What do I know about Ryan? I throw it in there, and the response time is instant, and it does pick up, some of the characteristics, and you could have a full conversation like you're texting with someone. So it's not just, we can't just say, oh, well, it's an infant stage. It's evolved.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, even if it is, it's in the infant stage, the two parts are, one is the speed at which these things are getting better and developing is insane. Yeah. And if this is the infant stage, like, I don't want to know what the, we've talked about this, we did a whole episode on AI, and we've talked about it several times, in the brief time that we've been doing this podcast. And like, it's just like, I don't think it's not hype like this stuff. It really needs, like, the government's, they're going to have to step in. Otherwise, like, there are going to be major changes to our society. It's going to upend society down the road.
Yep.
Because, I mean, just, yeah, like, you know, anything that's not, and we, you know, anything that's not manual labor to me, it's like, you're screwed, you know?
Well, there's a chilling video with Joe Rogan interviewing Elon Musk, and Elon's being all dramatic, and he's like, I told them for a long time that they needed to slow down AI. It needed to be regulated. And Joe Rogan's like, and they're not doing it, are they? No.
I don't agree with Elon on a lot of stuff, but I kind of do agree with that. Like, yeah, I think
in this instance, he might be right on.
Yeah, I mean, just because, like, it's like that, you know, if it goes unchecked now, you know, what happens when this stuff is that powerful that, you know, I mean, it already is. Like, you know, at the end of the day, okay, right at this moment, if I'm any kind of company or whatever, I don't need to hire people to write music for me anymore. I don't need to hire graphic designers anymore. I don't even need to learn Photoshop or any of that stuff anymore. I don't need to hire copywriters. All I need is somebody to go and edit whatever I put into ChatGPT. It is like you're getting to a point where, like, all these jobs, these creative jobs are going to be, killed. I read something or was listening to something, or I forget where, but it's, kind of like that. It's the opposite of the way it should have been. Like, AI should be doing menial jobs.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you.
Right? But not the creative, like it should be doing the menial jobs so we can be, and it's the exact opposite.
Yep.
It's killing all the creative jobs. Funny. It's like, it's not as good, as something that you can write, but
yet
I don't need that. And what happens when it gets to that point where it can create, unique, interesting song? I mean, it's really, I don't know. It's like, if somebody uses it, it's a little scary.
Well, So it's here's the thing. It's not going to replace all jobs of that nature, but it's going to replace all but one. So basically, you're not going to need if you need to score a film, you don't need a bunch of people doing the music. You need one who can just say, you know, who has the good ear and the taste to do it, right? And it, you don't need a million people to code. You know, you don't like for, you know, complex apps and stuff. A lot of people coding, a lot of people programming. You need one or two to make sure it's going the right direction. You know, specifically for music, you have to realize the different jobs that it's going to replace, right? So can it replace it can replace songwriters for the most part, right? It can replace mixing engineers, something, things like that are going to be some of the first to go, right? Someone who is very technically based. You can have a mixing program that's like, mix my song, and it can go from a bunch of different styles, and then you can prompt it to do it a little differently and say, bring this out more, bring that out more. Done. All mixing engineers are now obsolete. Then you can have it, the first easiest musician to replace is a drummer, and they already have AI drummer apps, which I use, and now they're going to get better. Something like a guitar is a harder instrument to emulate, but not that hard once it gets really good at it. So then you're going to replace all the all studio musicians, right? And you make it good. Then you're going to you're going to replace everything, and it's very easy. And for that reason, professionally, I'm getting out of music now. I heard that thing. I'm like, well, it's time to go. So I'll still do it. You know, for, you know, as part of a creative overall content based. So look, the idea is, so who are the people in music or a creative that can make money off of it? Right. Well, you're going to have to, like, artists, like content providers, people like humans that people that fans want to watch.
Live music element makes sense.
Live music can't, or some sort of live element, can't be completely replaced. So that's going to, that'll be
something. We say that though, but then we look at these raves where there is no live music being played and people are losing their mind and they're drawing hundreds of thousands of people
for that sort of thing. For like certain dance music, like electronic music. I think there will always be a connection where people will want to see people live. Well, so that is sort of safe, but
it's like, well, I kind of find like it's kind of with I found with personal training, even though I don't like, you know, I'm more in a management like position now where I still do some training, but I know people will say, oh, well, AI is going to get rid of trainers because people could just use an app. And I think that's partially true, but not quite, because, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to like training, for most people, it's not about the knowledge that the trainer has. It's that the trainer's there. It's the accountability. It's the motivation. You know, being a babysitter, therapist. You know, like your trainer, a lot of times you're not like on the list of things that you are to that person. Like the guy that designs their workout is like lower on that list as far as the things that they need. So you know, as far as like if you want to work out, like for the last 30 years, you can pretty much find a way that in a book or online or an app or whatever. And obviously, the apps get more advanced and they give you more personalized things. But I think something like that, you still want a person. So same kind of thing. Like if I go to New Orleans, right? Like I'm going to want to see live music, right? So you're going to still have that space, but the space of being like a studio musician or so, you know, a lot of artists now, like they're not going to need studio musicians because they can just have AI play this stuff and play it.
It was hard enough as one as it is.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, that's the issue, right? You know, and then
people to compose, people to do anything, like it's, you know, it's tough. Yeah.
It makes you wonder though, will live music age out? Like, because if you look at these festivals, they're people that a generation or so behind us and the music is getting more and more popular.
That
most of rap doesn't contain actual instruments. You know, will live music go away at some point?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think it'll ever go away. But maybe there's a space where it's more like, you know, classical music is to us, right? Like in our, in our world, right?
But it's gonna
not, you know, it is a thing that people go to, right? People still are fans of it, but it's not the popular thing. It's not mainstream. And it's something that you get dressed up and spend a lot of money to go see, right? Like, for, you know, so maybe that's where it's headed, you know,
maybe where it's headed. I don't know. Based on, like, I'm in Nashville and people very much so enjoy going out and seeing live music, seeing people work together. I don't think that that aspect is in, because it's in, here's the thing, because it's inexperience.
Yeah.
That's right. Fair. It's something you do as, you know, as people enjoy as an experience. And that's what it is. It's like live content now, right? You know, it's all about content. Well, now this becomes live content.
Yeah.
So yeah, look, humans will evolve. We'll find a way to make do, but yeah, that's, yeah. It's sort of a rough reality. Yeah. And as I've been saying for a long time, Judgment Day is coming. I have much bigger concerns than being replaced as a musician. My concern is being slaughtered by Terminators. So, which, if you don't think it's a real idea,
we've had a good run.
Yeah,
but I gotta ask, Justin. Now that you're closing the door on your music career, is the next stop OnlyFans? Because I'll be there. I'll be subscribing.
So, no, because that'll phase out too, because what's going to happen is there will be some very, very good AI porn where basically you'll be able to, input, either a favorite actress or actor or whoever it is you're into, and say, and then put on like a VR helmet and type in what you want, and you'll be able to do some really whatever you want type of VR porn, and it's going to look just like it'll basically be just like watching a movie, and I mean, who knows, right? It's
going to
be how far away do you think that is?
I
don't think it's that far away.
Let's look at Apple just released their own headset, right?
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be like Brian's glasses and it was still a VR headset.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they it's still always
it's getting there. Like the Apple, from what I understand, I know a guy who has it. It's great. It's probably the best of the VR headsets. And I have like the Oculus or the Meta Quest, and it's an awesome experience, but it's still not replacing like, you know, our everyday life yet. And now maybe it's a few years away.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think you're right though. We're probably not too far from being able to like type in, you know, here's what I want for my porn, and then it gives you that, and it looks like you're real people, and it's, you know, yeah, you know. So I mean, yeah, maybe you start your OnlyFans career now so that you can milk a solid 2 years out of it.
But, yeah.
All right.
I'll be milking a solid 2 years out of it too, Ryan.
Yeah, that's poor choice of words. All right. So next story. This is a very New York centric episode. So I apologize to people who are not in
New York. Reminds me. I'll have to talk about something later. So thanks for reminding me.
Okay. So I guess the first of our two New York centric stories. One is it was a devastating news as Knicks fans today, as our second best player, all-star and all-NBA player, Julius Randle, is out for the year. And what sucks and why it's newsworthy for us is, like, we've been Knicks fans. I don't know, Cynic, how big of a basketball fan you are, but, you know, like, we've been Knicks fans since we were kids. They, you know, in 93, they, you know, went to the finals. They had a finals run in 99. But since then, like, the Knicks have just sucked. They've been terribly managed. They've just gone from one bad move after another for the last 20 years, 25 years almost. And over the last couple of years, like, there's been a change, and they actually have been able to field a decent team. And by the end of January this year, you know, they made a couple important trades. This looked like a team that like could make a run. You know, I think everybody was excited. And then our second and third best players injured. And now we find out that Randle's out for the year, which pretty much is a devastating loss for the Knicks, because again, they were a team that, we had high hopes for and looked great when the entire team was healthy and on the floor. So it's like the curse of being like a Knicks fan.
Yeah, it's I can't remember an injury that has been so devastating, especially in basketball, because it's a game of your stars, right? Your stars are most important. Your role players are important too, but it's not like a baseball team where you have a lot of players, and if your star player goes down, you can still win. Or, you know, I guess in football, if your quarterback goes down, you're screwed. But even we've seen it in football where great teams, their star quarterback goes down and they still win. You can't do that in basketball. If you lose your star player, you're done.
Well,
that's it, for the most part.
That the one, you know, counterexample is the last time the Knicks made the finals. Right, Patrick Ewing was injured, and they made a run.
Very, very weak.
Granted,
East.
He was older, you know, and they had enough, but yeah, it's rough. I think the one thing I will say
is just rough.
Is I actually think it's better, you know, not better, but they wouldn't there if you were to say, okay, we're gonna lose either, and we don't know what if OG Anunoby will be back, but if you lose him or Randall, I would actually say we're better off with OG Anunoby in the lineup because of his defense and just how he changes the game.
Well, you just need that second score, second option. Like it's just sad because look, are they good enough to beat the Celtics?
Probably not.
Maybe not. But we're robbed of a potentially great series.
Yeah.
It's like, and I want to watch. Look, did I think they were going to win? Probably not. But there was the hope that they could have, and hope is what what you need. And it was going to be very entertaining. It was going to be a very entertaining series, either them against the Bucks or the Celtics. And we're robbed of it. Like, look, will they probably get past the first round? Yeah. Will they have a competitive series against whoever they play? Probably, but. Yeah. It's a very empty feeling.
Yeah.
So we're all it just stinks. It's not fun.
Well, the counter to that is as a Mets fan, you should know that Edwin Diaz destroyed the Mets season last year by getting hurt during the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah.
And I think that was more of a devastating loss only because they had a championship team. They floored a championship team. You have a bunch of middle guys, and you're playing well.
Yeah.
Brunson's playing well. Randall was playing well. But the Knicks haven't won a championship since 1973. Yeah. That's longer than I've been alive. There was a group of three superstars that could have came to the Knicks. They could have cleared the just a few years ago. And now, mind you, it didn't work out where they went.
Yeah.
But they headed across town to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
As a Knicks fan, a friend of mine that says all the time, the Knicks are now irrelevant. They've been irrelevant for a long time, and they're probably going to stay irrelevant until they get new ownership.
Well, no, I would say it's I would push back on that a little bit. I think, yes, do they need new ownership? Yes. But the Knicks, I think, in the last year or 2 years have become
relevant.
Like because they've been managed well.
They've become a third place team is what they've become.
Yeah, but they've been managed well. And so I think the one hopeful thing is they have a deep team. They have a strong core. They've and a team now that people want to come to. So whereas a few years ago, superstars did not want to come here, the Knicks are in a position now where they are one disgruntled superstar away from being a championship contender. And so I do think that that's the difference is, I think that people, they can bring in those free agents that maybe they couldn't, and who knows, maybe, who knows what decisions they'll make. They've got a stockpile of draft picks. They've got a young core. They've got, all-star
players.
And
they have the
money.
They got cap space.
And they have money. So I think there's some hope. It's disappointing because I think we all got excited that this year's going to be an exciting year. But at the end of the day, this is a 3-4.
We just wanted to enjoy it.
This is a 3-4 year project.
They made a big move. They made a couple big moves in its respect, but the East still isn't the West in basketball. Not that I'm a super knowledgeable basketball guy, but the East still isn't the West, and they're still looking up at the Celtics and the Bucks and the Cavs. I mean, so they still have a ways to go.
I don't think the Cavs, not the Cavs.
I think they're better. I think they're better than the Bucks they were on full strength.
Fully healthy,
they're definitely better.
But
they're second place if they had been fully healthy for most of the season. It's like think about the Celtics. Take away, three of their four best players. What are they? Like, it's the same thing. Any team.
Too deep down the rabbit hole, but their number ones and number twos don't compare. Brunson and Randall don't compare to Giannis and Lillard.
I disagree. I think that maybe I think Brunson is. Brunson's
I think
playing
as a,
MVP.
As a pair, no. But yeah, Brunson's playing like one of the best players. Like he's superstar level playing right now and carrying it. And yeah, like he's basically carried a team on his back that has been missing three of their four starters or three of their five starters. So I would say
I think he's up there with them.
Yeah, is he?
We can say that, like all New York teams, all we ever have to say is better luck next year.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's it. We win nothing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So our second New York.
The Rangers are pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're decent. So they got a big goon beating everybody up, so that makes me happy.
Yeah. So the second of New York-based stories is, have you heard about the spate of women getting punched randomly in New York?
Yeah, no. I did hear about that.
So there's been a recent spate over the last few weeks of, you know, and that's part is some people reporting it like on social media. So we don't, you know, can't, you know, don't know how true a lot of it is, but there've been several legitimate incidents of women just randomly getting punched in the streets of New York. Generally they're on their cell phones and looking down or texting, whatever, and just random people just punching them. And there've been at least two or three arrests. A couple have been caught like on, security camera footage, but like it's a legitimate thing that's been happening recently. It's crazy because, like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's frustrating things like this because you know, it's like it just feeds into that narrative that like New York's this crime ridden hellhole, which it's not, but you know, that becomes the big story
when you get people being pushed in front of subways and shit. It does give you pause.
Well, I mean, the problem is like the macro versus the micro. So you can, the thing is like, if, you know, if you look at the data, like crime is down, it's down compared to last year. It's trending downwards. It's been trending down for, you know, two decades, but you still have those incidents. So it's kind of more where your focus is, like, and that's not to diminish the things that do happen, but it's also like, you know, it's not this crime ridden hellhole, but it's a big city. And so those things are going to happen in any big city. It's just what gets amplified and what doesn't get amplified.
The fact of the matter is, there's still an incredible amount of misogyny, right, in the world. And there's been a rise of like red pill, black pill stuff all over the internet. And this sort of, there's this notion that's been spreading out that that women are taking over, they're replacing men. Right now, women have options. They have too many options. They, you know, they can date. Men are the victims. And this is a pervasive thought. And I do believe that it's given rise to this thing of this violence against women. Now, granted, there's always been violence against women, but usually it's under, you know, for either like a random attack for like a sexual assault, but mostly domestic violence, which is traditionally been the most common kind. But something like this, it feels like it's coming from this misogynistic, you know, bitterness towards women, for men that feel like they've been slighted. It feels that way. That would be my sense. And right now, and I know I've looked at some of the people that have been arrested. Some of them don't look too right in the head, but as we know, people that are often not right in the head read things and they get, you know, very influenced by it. And then of course, once one does it, you start to see copycat stuff going on. And yeah, it's sickening. And I've been saying it for a while. There's only a matter of time before, and we've already started seeing a little bit of it, where you're going to get some vigilantism, right? The like carry permits for firearms have increased like 20,000% or something in New York. And of course they're dragging their feet. But, when you start stepping like this, you're going to see a response. It's just going to happen. So I don't know. It's pretty sad.
But how many of these instances have actually happened that we know for sure?
That's because, the problem.
I mean, we've gone through this
there
before. Remember
too.
The years and years ago, it was the knockout game.
Random
hooligans were knocking people out during post COVID during COVID. Yeah. It was assaults on Asians are up.
Yeah.
And where it's just the media glorifying, which was a number probably close to the norm anyway. Now, as women are in the spotlight because of the things that are taking place, anything against them is going to be magnified 1,000 times over.
Yeah.
Not
there's
that
an element
I'm preferencing
of that.
By saying that I don't agree with assaulting anybody, let alone females, because I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. I'm just saying that it's probably being blown out of proportion, even though one is too many.
Yeah, no, that you're absolutely right. Like, what, how is it, what is it, where is it compared to the you know, is it just background, is it just background noise that's being amplified, or is it a real legitimate thing that's happening? And I think that's a fair point. Like, we don't know, but that's what happens, is the media will take hold of something. And like I said, like, you know, like with the crime thing in New York, it's like, if the media takes hold of it, so a lot of times that's what's going to get views. And then it's funny how wherever I travel, you know, people, you know, it's like, oh wow, how's New York? I hear it's not safe. It's like, no, it's perfectly fine. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a big city. Yeah. Stuff happens, but like,
we have a badass reputation. Yeah, and it persists. So,
yeah, I guess, but you know, but it's like, I grew up in New York in the '80s, so we're good. Perfectly happy with the city right now. So yeah. All right, so speaking of things that will trigger, I guess, weak-minded men. So they announced a Fantastic Four movie. You know, it's been a big deal because Marvel has it. Fox tried twice, took two swings at it, and failed. You know, pretty much both times. And they just announced that their Silver Surfer in this will be played by Julia Garner, who's going to be playing the Shah Bell version of Silver Surfer. I'm not sure if I pronounced that wrong. I'm not very familiar with that version of Silver Surfer, but we're getting a female Silver Surfer. I'm sure people are not going to be upset with that, right, Cynic?
I mean, they're going to spin it that it's from source material and it's been in comic books, which I probably 80% of people that go to Marvel movies don't read comics. Yeah. They just love Marvel movies, but they'll make that excuse that it came from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's just another reason for people to be upset about the movie. Yeah. They've already pulled the John Krasinski card, which aggravated the shit out of me to begin with. You know, oh, we can't use him, we're going younger. And then they turn around and they cast Pedro Pascal. So it's like, you know, which I thought you were going younger with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, I don't give a shit about the I didn't even know the Silver Surfer really had a gender.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude's silver. You're not seeing anything on him.
Yeah.
But I just think it's just, it'll be another reason that people try to just pull another block out of Marvel's tower.
Yeah. And that's I think the thing for me is my first thought was, oh shit, people are going to be upset. You know, and that's frustrating. Cause like, yeah, it's like, if make good movies, I don't care who you cast. You know, and you know, maybe there's a good story, whatever the case is, but it's annoying even for me that my first reaction is, oh great, you know, my reaction is, whoa crap, what are people's reactions going to be? And again, at the end of the day, I think the problem is like, if the movie does well, then no one's going to care. You know, everyone's going to go see the Fantastic Four. If it's a good movie, everyone's going to go out to see it. No one's going to say anything. If it's a bad movie, then they're going to say, oh, see, this is why Disney woke and they're screwing everything up. And that becomes, you know, the issue. And I don't know how you get around that, you know, because you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But that's kind of the world we live in right now, is that you get people reacting to things like that. And who knows?
So what are the chances that Disney is like, oh, well, if we cast the female Silver Surfer, that'll get people talking, and no publicity is bad publicity and controversy is good. So like, the more people that talk about it, like, does that, you think that ever factors in? Do you think they say,
I mean,
let's play these cards up just to trigger people because it makes more of a buzz?
Obviously, Disney's had its own issues. There was like kind of a shareholder almost takeover recently. They had their issues with DeSantis, and they've gotten a lot of blowback for trying to, you know, really focus on diversity and inclusion in a lot of the movies. And to me, sometimes I think it's superficial and it's just done so that they can say they did it. And other times I think they do a decent job with it. But I don't know from their perspective if that's the idea. Because I think the problem right now is the Marvel movies and shows are not doing as well as they used to. And so I don't know that they're in a position to just say, oh, well, no publicity is bad publicity. I think they want to keep people in. I do appreciate that they're not backing down to the kind of loud people who are screaming, oh, woke, you know, it's too woke, and why do you have the diversity or whatever. Like I'm glad that they're not bowing to that. So that's a good thing to me, right? And so now it's just like, all right, make good movies. Because my issue is with any of it has always been like, is it a good or a bad film? Like, you know, like The Marvels, I wanted to like that movie. I would love a movie with a diverse cast that's focused on female heroes. Like that's fine. We have so many male-driven heroes, right? It doesn't matter. Like, that's fine. But it sucked. It was a bad movie. And then that feeds into the narrative of the people that are like, oh, see, you know, like, look, see, this is why Disney's going, you know, it's terrible because they're focused on diversity. It's like, no, it's not that. It's just, it was a bad movie. And so, you know, that's the thing. It's like, just put out good stuff. And I'm glad, you know, that they are kind of not bowing or, you know, cowing to people. You going to say something, Tim?
Yeah, I was going to say that if this was Eternals 2 that they did it in, Justin, I would agree with you that maybe they're doing it for the publicity. But there's so much interest and there's so much lore behind the Fantastic Four. They don't need it. I feel like it probably costs them more than they gain with the situation.
Yeah.
You know, you lose those fringe types that have finally had enough and throw their hands up and march off and protest for because a character has boobs. I don't know. I don't quite understand it myself. It's never bothered me.
Yeah.
I just think that with the Fantastic Four, you don't need to do that because they're big enough. This group, as far as comics go, is right up there with the Avengers, as far as popularity, as far as people knowing who they are, despite the failed attempts at other movies.
Yeah. So I was a fan of Silver Surfer as, you know, as a kid in the comics. So like, I was hoping to see Silver Surfer. Yeah.
I didn't get it.
I think we all just thought he looked, I mean, the reality is like, he just looked cool. Right. Like, You just look badass with, you know, the zone.
I can say that in the Marvel and the Fantastic Four movies, he's the one thing that did kind of work.
Yeah.
Like visually, like he did look cool in the movies. Like it was a good transference from comic book to movie. But as far as the character, I never got it.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. And then our final last news story we'll talk about today is the UFC kind of came out of really under the radar, but UFC had a settlement the parent company TKO reached a $335 million settlement regarding antitrust lawsuits brought in by a number of fighters. So, you know, on the surface, like the settlement sounds good, right? It's a lot of money, but then you find out like it's tax deductible. And when you spread it out, like among fighters, it's not really going to be that much.
The lawyers and,
you know,
everything.
Yeah, exactly. After legal fees and spreading it out, it's not all that much. And like at the end of the day, like for a company worth billions of dollars, like again, $335 million tax deductible. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know that this is going to put a dent in like the business practices that are not great on the side of the UFC.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Justin.
I mean, the fact is in that until fighters can unionize, this will continue. That's the that's it. Like they're there's no protection for them, and no owner, no company wants their employees to unionize. It just doesn't, and it never benefits the people at the top, and it almost always benefits the people that are working. And it's funny that the people that are working are also the product. Yeah. So that's just how I feel. And good luck. There would be many battles, you know, until they're allowed to do that, and it's just going to be almost impossible. So,
yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't see UFC fighters as they are fighting for a union as much as they need it. But are you going to say, Senate?
But this is the problem, right? It's no longer 5,000 people in a bingo hall. It's 45, 50,000 people in an arena. And you still got guys fighting for 5 and 5.
Yeah.
And Dana White now is taking the stance where, well, go start your own fighters league and pay them what you want. And that's not the point. The point is they're bringing in millions of dollars every single event, sometimes tens of millions, just on the gate alone, not even counting pay-per-view that we don't have access to. This could be spread out a little bit more for most fighters who can only fight 2 to 3 times a year. And, you know, the maximum they're going to make is $30,000 doing it.
Yeah.
And then that's after all the time, the training and the injury risk and the CTE that goes along with it. It's ridiculous. But this was the best and probably last chance to get that union stuff done. And, you know, about 1,500 fighters walked away with probably $50,000 a piece if they're lucky.
Yeah.
It's not life changing money.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll just kind of go back to business as usual. Yeah.
And especially the thing is you can't, you're just not going to get the fighters to strike. Yeah. Like they're just not, you're right. Most of them are struggling
and they need to, you know, a lot of them are supporting families, and this is their dream. And it's just, you're not going to, and it's international too. So there's just no way you're going to get all the fighters to say, well, bring in replacements.
The only hope,
get the second tier guys.
The one hope is if the government were to really go after, you know, the UFC and the WWE, which are under the same umbrella, as far as the independent contractor status of the fighters. Cause at the end of the day, I think that's the real issue, where both companies, are doing wrong by their fighters, right? Or wrestlers or fighters, whatever, right? Like, they're all classified as independent contractors, but like, they're not. You know, they're for all intents and purposes, like, they're not independent contractors. They only work for those companies. They control how they interact with the media, how they use their social
media,
where they go, how they work, their time, their schedule, all that stuff is controlled. So the reality is that even though they try to skirt by just calling them independent contractors, they're not. And so I think that at some point, someone will go after them for that. And that's the only point where we will really, really see like legitimate change, because I think that's the issue.
Well, have you guys had the pleasure of seeing Nate the Train yet?
What?
Nate the Train is an up-and-coming fighter with huge knockout power. And he's like Rocky. He usually starts losing the fight and then figures out a way to win.
Okay.
But he's like a South Park parody of a fighter.
Okay.
Like, "Let's go" is after every other sentence when he screams his interviews. And as long as we have Nate the Train out there, you're never going to be able to get a union together because he'll fight for free.
Exactly.
You know, that's just the way it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's sad because you have these guys that are like, you know, that they're professional athletes. Like they're, you know, and I do, you know, do I think professional athletes need to make billions of dollars, you know, or half a billion or quarter billion? Probably not. But like, these guys are giving up a lot of their, sacrificing their bodies for this sport. And so then after you finish, to have to just go back into the regular world without some kind of nest egg is insane. Or, you know, a lot of these guys, that, you know, it's like after they pay, you know, if you're making 10 and 10, by the time you're done paying your gym fees, like you come away with nothing. Like it's crazy that you can spend
they're not earning what they're worth.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. Especially not worth when you can. So if you look at like the UFC's revenues compared to what they pay their athletes, it's like pennies compared to like what all the other major sports, you know, do. But again, it's on the fighters to, you know, rally together and say, no, we're going to take a stand. And that, you know, a couple guys have tried and they just, you know, there's not the will, I think, for them to do that. And that's on them, I guess.
Well, the problem is they try after they're done with their careers and they're no longer relevant.
Exactly.
And they don't have the platform to speak on it anymore.
Yeah.
So, but it's the same. I mean, even if you have a union to protect you, there was two Oakland A's that one of them, which was the best player in the team, hitting 400. They sent him down because he was wearing, you know, anti-ownership gear to the stadium.
Really?
So you're not even protected with a union.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right. So let's get to. So I guess we'll do quickly. Are you guys, Cynic, you watching anything this last week? Anything interesting that you'd recommend?
This last week. No, really, honestly, because of baseball.
Okay.
I've been tuned into baseball nonstop, and you know, the games have been fantastic. The season's going well. You know, Shohei finally hit a home run last night, which I was super happy about. So baseball's kind of been my primary focus.
How about you, Justin?
So how many millions of dollars is he getting paid for a home run per home run?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've seen it broken down like that, but it has to be. It has to be at least $500,000 a game, I would think.
Yeah, it's something insane.
I started watching the show that that Cynic recommended, New York Homicide. Going back to that idea, I thought it's pretty good. My issue with the show is that it's a half an hour show stretched out to, you know, 48 minutes. Like, there's a lot of drag out and a lot, you know, obviously so they can sneak in more ads. You know, they throw a lot of red herrings. It's clearly done in a way that makes the episodes longer than they really need to be. So gets a little tiresome, where they just like repeat stuff and things go nowhere. And they love to try to throw in whenever there's a red herring, they love to throw that in. But besides that, the show is good. There's some interesting episodes, and I've been enjoying watching it.
So, well, I mean, show me a documentary that doesn't do that, and I'll promote it till the end of time. Making a Murder was like one of the best documentaries ever, but they drug the shit out of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll share one thing I've been watching. It's called, it's actually relevant to our interests. It's called The Power of Film. It's like a documentary series on Max. And it's basically, it's really interesting. It's a guy named, I think, Howard Suber, who just goes through a lot of different movies, popular movies, and kind of just different aspects of movie making and storytelling and what makes it interesting and what, you know, what makes us identify with characters, what makes stories compelling. It's a really good series just on film and like how film works and why film works and why certain things work, why things don't. You know, it covers a lot of, you know, the biggest movies, you know, in the most, the highest, you know, the movies that we hold in the highest regards. And he does just a really good job of kind of explaining it to us. It's like almost like you're taking like a film course. So, you know, worth watching. It's kind of an easy watch. And again, goes over a lot of things that are well within like our wheelhouse and goes pretty in depth. So definitely worth watching if you're like a film fan, you know, as we all are. So anyway, let's get to our first review. So we got two reviews. X-Men 97, we'll talk about. So we've all, I think, Cynic and I are two episodes in. Justin, you're one episode or three episodes in. We'll do kind of a mini review of that and talk about whether or not we recommend moving forward. And then we'll get into talking about the Iron Claw, which I'm really interested in discussing with you guys. So first, we'll start off with X-Men. So X-Men 97 is a kind of reboot slash extension of the X-Men series from the 90s. So were both of you guys fans of the 90s X-Men series?
I was.
I guess. My first question is just watching, you know, this first episode, which, so I we'll stay away from major spoilers. The very beginning is Professor X is dead, right? Like that's, you know that from the beginning, so it's not a spoiler, but he's dead.
Even the trailer shows it.
Exactly. Yeah. And basically you have the X-Men dealing with the aftermath, and there are some really interesting twists that we won't spoil, but did you feel like for you, did this feel like a genuine, like an extension of the old show? Did it feel like a reboot? Like, what were your thoughts just on how this compared to the original like 90s series? Cynic.
I mean, I think it holds up there. Some of the animation's different.
Yeah.
And I know people had a problem with they reduced the size of Rogue's butt and the definition, which, you know, I guess ruined some lives because I saw more of that on the internet than rather than the content of the actual show.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the story, as far as them bringing back the voice actors, as far as the theme being the same, I mean, it all checks out. We're going, it seems like, a different direction in the story, which was good because I didn't want a reboot.
Yeah.
You know, you can always just fire back up the original X-Men if you want that. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was all good. I mean, the first episode felt like it dragged a little bit, but the second episode was good.
Yeah. What do you think, Justin? Did you feel like did you like the direction it was taking, you know, after, you know, like basically you being an extension of the old series?
Absolutely. I loved it. I think that it's a worthy continuation. It's cleaner, right? There's, you know, it's really well produced. The animation is great. The writing is great. It stays somewhat true to the original cartoon, but then veers off with new ideas, new stories and stuff like that. So I like it. They modernize it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
obviously,
they did a good job with that.
They bring in, but not overboard.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool, like the way they show like Gambit's character when he's not in costume, and stuff like that. So they develop certain aspects of it. I liked it. I think that it's very worthy, and I think it's really well done and put together.
So, question A: did you mark out when you heard the theme song, you know, for the first time again? And B, would that be on your list of favorite 90s theme songs?
It's decent. It's not great. I like the way they did it. It works for the show. It works for the show. I think that it's good. I think it by itself is not a great theme, but I think it works in context. But I will say the overall music for the show is really good. I forgot there was the two brothers that do it. It's really good, well-composed music. It fits perfectly. And also the animation is really excellent, right? And they go in, if you watch further down, they go into like the fantasy
aspects of it, because, and it's really good. Like a lot of, you know, how comic books go into these sort of fantasy segments within the comic where it goes, you know, so to different places. They do it really well where it doesn't go so far out that you're like, well, what's going on here? And it's very tasteful, and the animation is really, really good. So I'm very pleased with it.
So Cynic, this is a little, so the, you know, the original series was made for kids or teenagers. And does this feel, this one feel more like it's made for the adults that were teenagers?
We're starting the series off with Jean Grey knocked up. Yeah. I don't think they would have allowed that back in the day.
Yeah,
so it's gotten a little more adult.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wolverine's, need to be around Jean is a little lustful, more so than I felt like in the old cartoon. So yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think they adulted it up a little bit. Yeah.
Definitely did.
I showed it to
Violent.
My wife. Yeah. Yeah, that too. I showed it to my wife. She just wasn't getting it, but she didn't watch the original either. Yeah. So to pull somebody straight into it didn't work out for me, but might work out for others. But yeah, I felt like there was some adult tones to the show.
Yeah. Do you feel like, did you like the fact that I think the show kind of is working on like almost redeeming Cyclops as a character? I feel like he's been beaten down so much in the movies that it seems
I mean, it just seems like Cyclops is the Aquaman of Marvel. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like no respect whatsoever. Yeah, almost cuckolded in his own relationship, you know, not respected even though he's supposed to be the team leader.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think they are really trying hard. And I mean, I think he's a pretty excellent character. I just, if you stand next to Wolverine, you're always going to look bad.
Yeah.
Wolverine is a very minor character. That was one thing that surprised me so far. Yes. Yeah. But he is the most popular X-Men and one of the most popular Marvel characters, period. And they have just, he's not played a big role so far. I'm curious as to why they're doing
that. Makes sense because like,
they want to
He has presence, right? So as a character, like when he's there, he makes us, you know he's there. But we've also gotten so much Wolverine that, like, do we need that much more? Now, I guess the question for you, so obviously we won't go into spoilers, but like there is a major twist that we get at the end of episode one that I'm sure is going to be, you know, what a lot of this season is focused on. And what were your thoughts on that? Like, did that shock you? Did it take you out of it? Like, how did you feel about that twist, Justin?
Interesting. I had no problem with it. And then when you see where it goes in episode three, it makes sense. And the way they use it and the way they spin it, episode three gets pretty good. So no problem with any way that they're telling the stories and stuff like that. So it's all working.
How are you, Cynic?
Well, you know, mute the show for about the next 15 seconds, but they kind of did the first thing that in First Class is too, which I just recently watched again in the towards the end of the movie. You know, it was almost kind of like the same thing where people were given a choice to make. And so it was nothing new, but I think it brings an interesting spin to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely like it. I think it gives the story some momentum. And really connects all the characters, right? Like there's definitely they do a good job, I think, of kind of bringing everyone into the fold and making it kind of interesting. So now, Justin, you kept in our like little text chain mentioning how you were going to call it the Woke Men. So why don't you talk about this?
Yeah, I mean,
how do you feel about the controversy? You know, obviously, like, of course, there's some controversy about the show being too woke. You know, as we get that all the time. But
here's the thing. They were making a big deal about Morph being non-binary. It's like, okay, he's a morphing character.
Yeah.
Like to me that's the least of it. Yeah. But what more so is you know, quote unquote woke about it is the content. Is like like literally the way that they throw it in. Like there's one scene where Jubilee is talking to the a new mutant and she's and like literally she's there saying, "Oh, your parents don't know yet." And stuff like that, and it's look, the X-Men comes from is like the first woke comic
right,
really, because it came out of the civil rights and Stan Lee movement, and Stan Lee said that it paralleled the civil rights movement that African Americans were dealing with at the time. And now it seems the hint is more that it's taking on sort of the LGBTQ community.
Wait, no, I thought it
feels like that more. And on top of that, it, when you look at the villains, like Friends of Humanity, the way that they're portraying the bad humans kind of seems like a who's the Moms for Liberty, you know, like think like those types of groups that sound like they're in, you know, for the people, but really they're hate groups. And the hate groups are the, are the human hate groups are in there, and they hint very heavily at this sort of right wing, Trumpist, you know, core, and they're pretty careful, like, to not make it racial, because they make sure that they're like all the bad guys are mixed diversity racially. But the hint is like, if you look at it, they look and are sort of representative of like, you know, like sort of insurrectionist types. They look like it. And there's even the third episode where they, you know, spoiler, sort of spoiler alert, right? There's a UN meeting, a UN trial, and the people after the mutants breach the UN, border and the security, and they get past it, and they're all marching in there and stuff like that. And I'm like, this sounds like something very familiar. And just the way that they're talking, so much parallels. And you know, I'm online a lot, reading lots of social media posts, and the way that they're talking about the mutants on, you know, in the X-Men reminds me so much of what I hear people talking about transgender people. Oh, they're freaks. They're this, they're not, you know, we need to stand up. They're taking over, you know, the liberals and the woke mob are taking us over. And those exact sentiments are being said in the show. Oh, they're taking over. They're going to ruin humanity for us. They're going to oust us. We're going to lose our place in society. So the very, very similar things that you read on social media about, certain people, like, you're hearing that.
What? I'm still confused with what side you're on this.
I'm being facetious when I call it woke men.
Okay, I'm like, but, yeah, no, because.
Were you starting to wonder where he was on January 6th for a second there?
For a second, they're like, wait a second, you say you sound like you're having a hard time with this. You were going to jump in, Cynic.
They included Sunspot, which I thought was a great character. To throw a little nudge someplace else, I think it was Screen Crush did a video of 75 episodes of the old show in 35 minutes. And it just amazed me about the amount of content that cartoon actually went through in, you know, a half hour's time. As a comic book fan, they touched on just about every major X-Men storyline that there was, yeah. Or at least a bunch of the other groups and characters that you wouldn't really know about, and focused a lot on the Juggernaut. So, you know, I'm kind of sad that we're only getting a short run and we're only getting a couple episodes at a time. Yeah. I really do hope that they continue on with this project, because I'd like to see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, so then I guess we'll jump into our, you know, final thoughts, which I think you started that up. So Cynic, why don't you give us I'm guessing you're going to keep watching it. So,
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm all in on it. I only realized that there was two more episodes today. That's why I was asking how many we were going to cover. Cause if not, I was going to watch the other two before we got on, but yeah, I'm down. I want to see what happens. And I was just seeing that Ross Marquardt from The Walking Dead actually got a role in it. So I'm excited to hear what he does with it. Oh, and to go back to what I was watching, I forgot to tell you that we finished off the Rick and Michelle The Ones Who Live, and it was fucking fantastic.
Really? Okay.
So we got to talk about it at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Justin, so you're going to keep watching?
Absolutely. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah.
But you know, Ryan, you didn't tell me whether you agree with me. Do you not see all the sort of modern political social undertones?
No, I definitely do. It doesn't bother me. And that's
about bother.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like, you know, I do. And that's what the X-Men's always been. Like, you know, whether yes, it started as civil rights allegory, but there are definitely parallels to any struggle, and whether, and very much parallels to the LGBTQ struggle. So like, I could definitely see the parallels. I could definitely see that they're emphasizing that. And I'm glad again, you know, that, you know, some executive at Disney didn't see Morph's character and say, people are kind of upset with this stuff. Let's pull it back. Like, I'm glad they did it because, you know, we need that. And like, that's the character. And nobody complained when it was, what's your name? What's the blue character? The Jennifer Lawrence
Mystique.
And no one complained about Mystique. So, you know.
Yeah, but the cool part about Morph is he's actually morphing into mutants that aren't on the show. Yeah. So that's kind of cool to get.
It's
almost like a little cameo.
Yeah.
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 No, that's great.
There was one funny moment where it was so predictable. And look, it's a little bit of a spoiler, but it's not really. If you know the X-Men, like there was one point where I think it was like Beast was talking and something happened. He's like, there's only one person so maniacal, so evil, so... Do you think what word is he going to use to describe next along that line to describe a villain? Come on, you had to see it coming. Well, you'll see it coming. I won't say
okay.
It's just so obvious. You know who he's going to say, and of course he does. It was like you could read the line, but you'll see. You haven't gotten there yet. Okay. You'll see it.
All right. Cool.
So now a little foreshadowing.
And then my thing, I think it's great so far. I love the animation. I think the story is really good. It's mature, so it's like it's made for us, right?
It is.
Like it was made for us as teenagers, and now it's made for us as far beyond teenagers at this point. But I'm enjoying it, so I'm definitely going to keep watching it, and highly recommend it. Whether as long if you're a fan of the X-Men, if you're a fan of the animated series initially, it's a good show. Totally worth watching. All right, so let's get to our second review, which is The Iron Claw. So The Iron Claw tells basically the mostly true story of the Von Erich family, which, for us growing up as pro wrestling fans, I know we're pretty sure we are all aware of the Von Erichs and just one of the most tragic, family. It was like they were cursed. And what's crazy is if you watch this movie, like I watched it with my wife, and she didn't know anything about the story. And like it's crazy that this story has to pull back on some of the insanity and horrible stuff that happens to them. Like there's even worse stuff that happens that they just don't include, which is crazy. But I guess my first question, and I'll start with you, Cynic, is did you come into this with a lot of knowledge of the Von Erichs and just what they the family had been through?
I knew that stuff had happened to them. I didn't know it was to that extent in kind of succession. And I knew that that there was a curse around them, that was the talk of the, we as wrestling fans, most of it was WWE, but I did actually see some of their like AWA stuff and stuff from down there on ESPN, but I wasn't able to follow it because we never kept other organizations on TV in the Northeast.
Exactly.
But I did see some of their matches. So I remembered who they were. I knew that there was some buzz around, bad things happening to them, but I didn't know to that depth. That makes
sense. Yeah. And you knew Justin, right?
Yeah, I knew. Yeah. I knew all the tragedy that had been befallen the family.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get to our review. So we're going to start with the story. I'm going to say before we start, let's save your thoughts on casting for performances. So don't mention, let's not mention, cause there's a lot to talk about with some of this, with some of the casting. So let's save that for when we get to the performances, but, let's start off kind of talking about the story. So kind of like any true story, this takes liberties.
Sure.
To me, I feel like it wasn't too bad, but like, Justin, do you feel like they did a good enough job kind of dramatizing the story without taking too many liberties or making it seem too, too fantastical or unrealistic?
Yeah, I think, I'm totally fine with the, totally fine with the stories. I think it told what it had to tell for there's the breadth of what's went on. I think it hit it fine. I know that it went very quick with certain things, right? Because it's a movie, it's like one tragedy to the next, and it just happened. Which, in real life it wasn't exactly like that, but it almost was in a weird way. Like things did happen. And for real life they were happening very quick. Yeah. One thing I would have liked, and I think that would have been a nice for the backdrop, is it just doesn't touch on at all the influence of like Vince McMahon and the WWF at the time, WWE, basically buying everything out and taking
it out. But
it would have been nice to have if they touch on it at one point in the very end. But I think that for non-wrestling fans, just to know the radical shift in the wrestling industry, because wrestling is a big part of the movie, would have just been nice to
just, you know, when, you know, there was that big part, you know, later in the movie where it's like, do I sell, do I not, yeah. you know, and, you know, and there was a beef, you know, between Kevin and his father and saying, oh, you ruined the business, like with, you know, not including there was, I thought was important information for viewers that were not knowledgeable about wrestling, but that's pretty much it. Yeah. Like I, as far as the, what I would have liked to have seen in the, you know, in the story would, a little bit more, I think yeah. it would have helped a little bit.
I would disagree a little bit there just because I think the, yeah. I feel like there was a lot of story to cover, which is my part of my next question. Yeah. It, you know, there was a lot to cover, and yes, the Vince McMahon takeover is an interesting story in and of itself, but that's a thing is that's a story in and of itself to tell that I think it would have just made this story more convoluted if we had to go over that whole thing. But Cynic, you know, Justin touched on it. Like this family goes through a lot of tragedy, and there's a lot, you know, each tragedy in and of itself, you could write a whole movie on just that. Do you feel like the movie kind of falls under that weight of like trying to get to each point? So did, you know, I feel like it doesn't spend enough time on each thing because it's like, oh, we got to get to this tragedy. We got to get to the next tragedy. Do you feel like it just kind of the pacing was off?
Well, we're looking at almost 2.5 generations of Von Erichs in this movie, you know, from the father all the way to the very end with the sons, you know, so we're looking at that's a lot of time to cover in a 2 or 3 hour movie. So, yeah, I mean, the pacing did make it feel like a Von Erich snuff film. Yeah. It really like it hits you in the feels that it's not just, hey, all these characters that we introduced to you and that are all great brothers to each other, don't get attached to any of them because they're all on their way out.
Yeah.
It was worse than a Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah, seriously.
Like it was the Red Wedding with Von Erichs. Yeah. It was super fucking bad.
Well,
but just touching on what you guys were talking about before, if you think about it, what Vince McMahon was, what he did was genius. I come in and I pilfer all your stars, and then I wait till you're not making any money, and then I come in and I'll make a lowball offer on your territory because, you know, you're probably in the red now. That's fucking insanely genius.
Evil, but genius.
Yes.
But that's where, like, there's you know, and I don't know how this is going to work now with Vince McMahon, you know, being, you know, just like persona non grata at this point. But, like, that's the, you know, that's a whole story in itself is the Vince McMahon takeover of the territory system and how, you know, we got to the world we are today, you know, it's the WWE and like, and everybody else. So I think that,
there's nobody, you know, the next competing organization is three levels below the WWE. And now that they've teamed with the UFC, like they're doing an event at the Apex now.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I think it might be the first live SmackDown or something. They're doing it at the Apex.
Crazy.
So, you know, they're a world power at this point.
Exactly. It's funny you mentioned it's like Von Erich snuffle. I my issue again with the story was more just it almost felt like a Wikipedia entry to me. Like I kept thinking about it like that because it was like, okay, we got to hit this point, we got to hit that point, and so it felt like the pacing for me was a little off. Like I feel like there's a world where you focus the movie around one of the tragedies, and it means a little bit more. Like if you make us aware of how bad things are, but we're focused in one point in time, I think that might've been a little bit better of a movie because the pacing here was off because you're traveling. Yeah. Like 2.5 generations, you're going over, you know, 20, 30, 40 odd years, of this family and the tragedy. And it's like, there's so many things that happened to them that it's hard to give everything equal weight. And I'm going to ask this a little bit more when we get into the feels, cause that's another issue is how it handles some of these tragedies is weird. But let's get into so performances, which may be like the largest issue I had with this. So I'll just ask you first, Justin, what were your thoughts on the casting?
I really liked it and a lot more than you did. And where are you like? And I know where you're coming from. Like, where are you going to find a bunch of 6'3" muscle bound guys that can all act really, really well? It's like I don't mind. Like, yeah. You know, if you're going to find Cary Von Erich is a hulking human being, right? Like, look at him. Where are you going to find that that's outside of a Marvel movie that can really act?
It didn't bother us. I could suspect.
Like, look, yeah, there's a few of them, but it's tough. No. Like, I didn't mind the casting as much as you do. And I knew watching it that it would bother you. But for me, it's like, I get it. It doesn't. That wasn't the emphasis of the movie to me. So I thought that the characters did a good job acting, right? Even if you felt that they, you know, maybe they look, it could have been better to have these more hulking figures that were more representative of what Von Erichs really looked like and felt like. But I, for me, it didn't bother me. And I thought that everyone did a good acting job. I thought the acting was really good.
How about you, Cynic? What were your thoughts?
They're a unique looking family. I just don't know where you were going to find people. Yeah. Acting over likeness is what I'll say. Like, yeah. Give me better acting compared to likeness. I mean, yes, they did do Jeremy Allen a terrible disservice, giving him a role that was probably a foot shorter than he was. Yeah. But was he great in the role? Yeah. Yeah, he was great in the role, so I'll buy it. But it was like mini me in a lot of ways, because that the Texas tornado was huge.
It was monster.
So in him standing next to the other taller guys didn't help.
Did not help it. Yeah.
They need to put some lifts in his boots or something, or boot for that matter, I guess.
Yeah. So, okay. My issue actually is, okay, I think there's a couple things that they could have done to fix it or to solve it and all within the movie. So I think that the first issue is they look, if you looked at the three brothers, right, when they're doing their promo photos, they look, they kind of fit the Von Erich look. The issue is they probably should have cast other wrestlers that were smaller. So like when they're around, so the thing is like when they were around, so you have these guys that are larger than life, right? Like in real life, you know, they're larger than life. And so knowing that, like, yeah, I can suspend disbelief, but I feel like they should have done they should have gotten the Tom Cruise treatment. Like, put people around them that are a little bit smaller to at least not make them look tiny. Because there were moments where they just looked like average size. So I think that was the first part. The second thing is, I actually, my bigger issue is I don't think you needed to recast them. I think that the roles should have been swapped. So at the end of the day, like, Zac Efron, he did fine. But as the lead, I don't think he worked, because this movie sort of focuses on his character. Was it Keith or David Von Erich? He's the lead character, and I don't think he had the range to pull it off, because every time he's supposed to like emote, he just kind of had this look on his face. It was just a look.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't draw the emotion. So right. So to me, right, he was built like the Texas tornado. Like, he was jacked. Yeah. Yes. He's not the tallest guy in the world, but he was in incredible shape.
You said him next to Jeremy Allen White, and he'll be the tallest guy in the world.
Right? Yeah. So, like, make him the Texas tornado. Like, he should have been the Texas. Jeremy Allen White is a fantastic actor. I mean,
he's a better actor.
A fantastic actor. He should have been the lead, because he is a guy who does have range, who can emote, and who can play that. We've seen him in roles as Lip, in Shameless, in The Bear. He's a guy who can pull emotion out of you. I mean, he's great at that, right? Like, we've seen that. So he should have been the lead in this movie. And then Zac Efron should have been the Texas tornado, because A, he didn't need to have that range, and B, he looked like it. And so that, to me, was like, that's the easy fix, right? It's just, if you swap those two characters, you've got no complaints from me on the casting and how it looked. And so I think that was a bigger issue. Yeah.
I think it's a matter of star power. If this movie would have happened 2 years or 2 years from now, Jeremy Allen White would definitely be the lead, because he's the bigger actor.
Yeah.
But when this project started, Zac Efron had the bigger name. Yeah. So I think that you probably wouldn't have been able to sell the movie without Zac Efron in the lead.
Exactly. No, so that's the thing. So I think, you know, and it wasn't bad. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, Zac Efron was terrible. He's not bad in the movie by any means.
Good.
I just think that, again, for a movie that was all about that character and how, you know, he's reacting to just everything that happens to him, I don't think he was quite right for that role. And I think that, again, you have an actor in Jeremy Allen White right there who can do that. And also you have the look. So I think, again, like, my whole issue with the size and their look, I think, is fixed by that. But you're right. Like, it's not, you know, not something you could really do with it at that time.
Just a quick point before we move on. Going back to what we were just talking about, now they cast a guy to play Ric Flair. He looks like Ric Flair, but he doesn't sound or can't act. Yeah. It doesn't sound anything like Ric
Flair. So that was a strange casting.
So yeah, I mean,
like, he had a couple of the mannerisms. Weird.
Yeah, it was not good. But besides impending doom, the Von Erich's biggest foil was Ric Flair. Yeah. So they needed to land that.
That. That was weird because, you know, the actor said, and I don't know how much is true or not, that he, you know, there's enough footage, or I don't know if I'm paraphrasing a lot, but, you know, there's enough footage of Ric Flair that he wasn't going to do, and he didn't want to do an impression. So he wanted to capture like his
essence. You're playing Ric Flair.
But yeah, you're playing Ric Flair, one of the most, like, and at the end of the day, like, he's one of the most iconic people. Like, they should not, he was not right for that role. Or at least he did not perform that role properly. Like, he should have, you know. Because yeah,
they could have went and got Jay Lethal, and he would have done a better job.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
well, where's the director's role in this of saying this is not, you know, this is not right? Like, we're not.
I guess it's a choice, you know, and they were okay with it, but I think
they were okay with it.
A poor choice.
I'll tell you who I thought did the best acting job was Holt McCallany, who played Fritz. I think he did an excellent job acting. Yeah. He really hit the role. Now, based on reality, he wasn't that harsh of a man. He was actually the big antagonist, I think.
I've actually heard he's like, he was worse.
He was, that's not what Kevin Von Erich said. He said that his dad was kinder than he appeared, and that it had to be hammed up. There had to be this, you know, and look, I'm sure they butted heads at point, and he was hard on them, probably very physically, but I think they made him crueler and less feeling than he was in real life is what I heard. I don't know. But regardless, I thought he did a great job acting in the role. I think he was the strongest actor out of the cast. And I think his part was written really well.
You know, he was fantastic in Mindhunter. Yeah. It's a shame that we're not going to get another season of that. But who would to think, you know, his dream was to win the world title, and they wouldn't put the world title on a Nazi? What a bad character choice if he wanted to progress in the business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that gets to my next thing. So now we're going to get to like the feels, right? Like the, you know, did we feel something? I think on some levels we did, but I think that the movie missed the mark a little bit on that. So part of the issue for me with the movie also was that some of the biggest moments, right? Some of the most tragic deaths happen off screen. They establish early on that Fritz Von Erich wants the world title. And then when he can't get it, he wants one of his kids to get it. And they make a big deal about which kid is going to be the one that will be like the next one to win the title. And this is built up early on in the movie. And then when it actually happens, we don't really see it. So we don't really see him win the world title, and we don't see Fritz's reaction. So I was like, what a weird choice. Weird. I feel like obviously just from a standpoint of like, this all real happened in real life, you feel something because it hurts. But I feel like the movie doesn't do a great job of making you feel that, because whenever a lot of times these things happen off screen and it doesn't cover, like I said, like this moment, like that, we should have seen this moment of elation, bring him up to then just pull him back down when another kid dies. Yeah. So I thought that was weird, but like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, do you feel like the movie, do you feel like there were some missed opportunities to really make you feel something?
Yeah, I really did. I mean, if you didn't know the story, then you wouldn't, it would have took you 10 minutes to figure out that Cary Von Erich was in some sort of motorcycle accident and lost his leg.
Yeah.
Like, they really drew that out. Like, it was like, we just skipped over that part and you get to figure that out later. Yeah. Like, we didn't put the instructions in the box. Good luck. You know, I did feel that it took away a lot of the weight. Things not being shown, but being told to us, changes the mood and the direction of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Justin?
Yeah, the same. I feel like they, like the parts where they could have been very emotional weren't, and were replaced by sort of fabricated emotion, like that part at the end where like the brothers meet in heaven. Like that, I mean, look, I don't mind the part because it was where Zac Efron's character was Kevin Von Erich. Was there was two ways to look at it. Either they were actually doing it, or he was imagining that they were doing it and it made him happy. But it's sort of faux emotion, just like these brothers coming together and it's this reunion. It struck me as odd. I didn't mind the scene too much, but I didn't love it. And it felt like faux emotion. And then finally, when he blows up at his dad at the very end, it felt like there was a lot of great moments that could have brought the feels, and they sort of whiffed on that and sort of threw in these ways to like, you know, to make you feel it sort of artificially. Yeah. I don't know. That's my thought on that.
The gallows humor that goes on at my house, I was making the joke like, oh, we got to take care of this little fucking kid now. Then we got to baby this kid forever. Like, couldn't he have grown up into an adult in heaven? Like, I'm going to have to feed this kid and change, you know, make sure he doesn't pee his pants. Like, this is the afterlife for me. Yeah. You know?
Well, there's also one more thing about that they totally missed the mark on is that Kevin Von Erich and, of course, Kerry Von Erich had a kid and they went on to be successful wrestlers, yeah. And they don't even mention that could have been a nice way to solve it up, like where they come, it comes full circle and they have these kids with a nice successful career, like, and they just it didn't need a lot, but it could have just had a little, it's like, oh, that sort of pulls it together.
Yeah but can we talk about whiff. Can we talk about the selfishness of that decision where 75% of the family business ends up in mortality, that we're just going to push our kids in that same fucking direction?
I know, that's funny. You're not realizing it.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, no, so now I'm going to skip logic inconsistencies because it's based on a true story. It's mostly true.
There was none.
There's nothing. Yeah, like it's pretty solid. Like there's nothing to talk about there, really. But the last topic, so we're going to talk to audiovisual. So, I think it was shot well. What did you guys think about how's the choreography? How did the pro wrestling look like real pro wrestling? What were your thoughts on that?
I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
But it also worked on Glow, which is a show that, you know, didn't get nearly enough credit for the work that the actors put in.
Oh,
Which, by the way, Chavo Guerrero choreographed that as well. And he was in this movie as the Sheik. This, so I'm sure he was probably behind the scenes working it.
Yeah.
Excellent stunt person, actor, coordinator, you know, he's doing it all, which I'm glad to see that because his wrestling career was middle at best.
Yeah.
So. You know, I mean, the wrestling, what wrestling we did see, it worked.
They did a good job with it. I think it's always tricky watching pro wrestling in movies because you do have, it's this weird thing where it's like, it's fake, we know, or, you know, it's choreographed and then they're shooting it. So it's always tricky because sometimes you'll see movies that shoot it almost like it's a real fight, some that don't. Mm-hmm. But I think they did a good job of capturing kind of the essence of wrestling without any issues. Justin, any thoughts on the soundtrack and the music choices?
A great sort of soundtrack. It had nice like old rock and roll, which sort of referenced the time. Worked for me. The choreography, the shooting was nice. It had one thing I liked about it. It had a sort of a golden veneer to the whole movie. The way that it was shot, it felt like everything was sort of shot in the late afternoon, sort of with these nice visual scapes. So, and the wrestling was nice. So no problem with the technical way that it was, that it was shot. So I thought that was pretty solid.
Cool. All right. So let's go. So Cynic, your final thoughts and your rating for the movie.
Yeah, the casting was faulty. The story was good, but I thought it was rushed. You know, overall, I mean, as much enjoyment as you could take from watching this family be slaughtered, I guess I enjoyed the movie. You know, I would love to see more wrestling biopics, and we were looking at one about Hulk Hogan with Chris Helmsworth, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen now, which would have been the perfect choice for that character. You know, overall, I think it was good. I mean, I suggested it to you guys after I watched it, and I would suggest it to most people if they held some sort of interest in wrestling at all.
Yeah. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I didn't love it. I'm glad I saw it. I would give it somewhere between a 6 and a 7 out of 10. So sort of if you like wrestling, if you're interested in the story, worth watching. It's not, it's not a great movie, but it's decent enough. I didn't mind the cast as much. I didn't love the pacing of the story. That was my biggest problem with it.
I would say I'm solid, like right there with you. I think I'm a 6.5. I think it's a movie that if you're a professional wrestling fan or you grew up a professional wrestling fan or had some interest in it, I would say I recommend it to you, and it's, you know, it's worth watching because it's just such an interesting and fascinating story, and does give you some insight. And like, you know, one of the things, like when I was a kid, like the Texas Tornado was like my favorite wrestler when I was like, you know, in elementary school. And I didn't know that he was, you know, he had a shot at the Olympics and lost out because of, you know, because of the boycott. Like, so you learned some stuff that I didn't know. Yeah. And again, it is a very interesting story. And yeah, it's like hard to call it entertaining, but it is just so, it's just so crazy that that can happen to one family. And again, that it's not like when you finish watching a movie, definitely, you know, look up the real story because it's even crazier and even worse. So, you know, definitely if you're a pro wrestling fan, it's worth watching. And one of the better pro wrestling movies, not that there have been that many that have been that good. But if you're not, you know, there are issues. Like it does, I think it wants to be, you know, a kind of, you know, awards type of movie, but I think there's some issues with the pacing. Again, I had my issue with the casting, which again, it's weird. If you're not a pro wrestling fan, I don't know if you'll have that big of an issue, except that I just don't think that the performance was quite where it needed to be for the lead, but it still was, again, it wasn't bad. So yeah, it's 6.5, solid 6.5. If you're a fan of wrestling, definitely watch it. If you're not, you know,
speaking of fan of wrestling, are you guys going to watch WrestleMania this weekend?
I'm going to try, but so I'll definitely watch Saturday night. We're going upstate to see the eclipse, to try to catch the full eclipse. So I'll try to watch it Sunday night, although it might be on my phone, but like, I kind of, you know, I'm weirdly invested in this story, even though I haven't watched, you know, any wrestling except like the Royal Rumble and like SummerSlam last year. And I think WrestleMania last year, but like, I'm invested in the Cody Rhodes story. So I definitely will find a way to catch it. And like the whole thing, The Rock's been awesome with it. So this whole, like, somehow, remember our first episode, we talked about The Rock hijacking WrestleMania. Somehow they've turned this, like, they've turned this into like an amazing story. The Rock, you know, his heel Rock has been amazing. Like, I don't watch the shows, but I'll go on YouTube and watch the, you know, watch the promos, and the promos have been outstanding. So I'm in. I'm gonna, you know, I'll definitely check it out. There's an amazing, and not even with The Rock and Cody Rhodes, there's an amazing CM Punk Drew McIntyre promo. Did you see that? The one with CM Punk, Seth Rollins, and Drew McIntyre had this amazing.
Oh yeah, where he was talking about the shoe polish in his beard and the lips in his boots.
And even like Drew McIntyre, like, again, I don't follow it anywhere, but I'm like, I'll watch these promos, and he's hilarious. He did this. There's one he did where he's like in a funeral home. He's hilarious. So like, so I'll definitely find time to watch WrestleMania, and you know, I'll try to catch.
Isn't there a large part of you too, like, not to get too into the story, but that hopes that they do all get along, that like they're lifting each other up, and it's not just, you know, trying to one up each other?
It seems like they are. Like, it's hard, you know, who knows, but it definitely seems like it's not, from everything you hear in interviews. Like, there was a great Ariel Helwani interviewed CM Punk. It was like a 2-hour interview, highly recommend it if you've been following any of that stuff. But like, it seems like it's a different locker room. Like, they get along more. It's not as cutthroat as it was, like, you know, when we watched it, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s. So it does seem like they get along better, and that they're all kind of in, you know, in it for each other, and more, like I said, less cutthroat than it was you know, way back when.
How about you, Justin? Are you gonna watch?
Watch what?
WrestleMania.
Oh. No.
Not gonna check it out. I'll if there's not a good game on, I'll check it out, but only because it's free on the Peacock app for
that's
now.
The thing, yeah.
I don't know if that changes when they go to Netflix and they start trying to do pay-per-views again. Yeah. I think it would be a mistake. You know, during the pandemic, my job stopped charging for a service, and then everybody expected it for free.
Yeah.
Going forward, if the WWE suddenly decides that they're going to start charging for pay-per-views again, I think they're in for a hell of a wake-up.
Yeah, I think they can. I mean, yeah. I think at this point, it's bigger than it's been maybe ever, right? You know, it is somehow, you know, in the last couple of years, become a juggernaut again. And I think a large part of that is the access and not having to pay $60, you know, a month for pay-per-views. And that, like, a casual like me, right? Like, I'm not even casual. Like, I listen to Jim Cornette's podcast, basically. Like, that's what I follow. And then, like, I'll look at a promo on YouTube if I hear that it was good. But even for me, like, I will watch the Royal Rumble. I'll watch WrestleMania because it's on Peacock and I get it for free. I will not spend money on it. So I think, like, it, you know, and it's become big enough that you do have a lot of people who are kind of casual fans who will kind of tune in here and there. So I think it would be a huge mistake for them to go back to the pay-per-view model, because I think they've got something good going. And again, it's like, it's as big as it, you know, it's been in a very long time. So I, yeah, it would be a mistake, I think, you know, to do that. All right. Well,
fine. Maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, it's like, I feel like you have to kind of know, be invested in the story and everything at this point to get any enjoyment out of it. But yeah, too bad, because I kind of, too bad I'm not going to be around, because it'd be fun to do like a watch party or something. But yeah, it should be fun. We'll talk about it next week.
We'll have fun watching the eclipse, Galileo.
Yeah. <Ooh. laughs> All right. Well. All of our stuff is at, you can find all of our stuff at portable, all the social media stuff. So all the social medias at portable_whole, and our website is portablewholepublishing.com. So Justin, until next time,
watch out for the hole.